I do want to say that you can read her bio in there and all those great things, but I do want to emphasize she was a collegiate golfer at Princeton, and I understand it's like a pretty neat college to go to. And one thing I do want to remind everyone of, and this is from me personally, she does a lot for sports medicine. She really gets what we do. She really is very open to everything that we do as athletic trainers and therapists. She's helped us with physicals. She's been on with a sign-off doctor for athletic physicals for us. She's also done sideline coverage. And to that, you guys understand the relationship you have there during a game with the physician being there and really taking a lot of load off you. So it's for that, we're very grateful. But she's spoken before at the update, back when we were at Minute Maid. She's been gracious to give of her time. We asked her to focus on what the title is. And for some of us, especially as more seasoned veterans, you know, the wrist is pretty complicated. You know, the kid comes in, there's something wrong, you're not sure what you're doing. You poke it, it hurts, let's ice it. Well, I can tell you that this type of talk is, I think, was needed, which is why we asked her to give it to. So she is the proud mother of two children. Recently had a two-month-old, correct? Yes, so she's here, she's still sane, she's all good to go. And without further ado, Dr. Kanda Tunis.
Well, good afternoon. I'm really honored to be asked back again after a couple times speaking on a few different topics. Before, I've done some stuff about basic injuries and scaphoid fractures and things like that. So this talk, ulnar-sided wrist pain is just a tough thing for me to evaluate. And I think, you know, when somebody comes in to, you know, your office and they say, my wrist hurts, and it's kind of a little overwhelming sometimes. So this is kind of a diagnostic talk a little bit, just to kind of, you know, give you some tips on the anatomy, some of the more common, you know, diagnoses and things like that that might be giving you pain on the ulnar or pinky side of the wrist. So I have no financial disclosures to make. So, you know, pain along the ulnar side of the wrist is a fairly common complaint. It affects people of all ages, from your teenage athlete to, you know, 60-year-old grandfather, and it has a lot of different causes. It's very multifactorial, and I kind of liken it to sort of the low back pain of hand surgery, because it's kind of complicated and has a lot of different things to sort of be aware of when you're trying to make a diagnosis. It's not advancing. There it goes. So the goal of this talk is, again, to help you. If somebody, you know, a kid comes in and says, my wrist hurts. And one of the things that I'll do, because sometimes they'll just kind of say, oh, it just hurts here. And so one of the first things I do is kind of say, draw a line down your wrist. Does it hurt on the pinky side of your wrist or the thumb side of your wrist? Because the differential is totally different between the two. So this is geared towards the sort of the pinky or ulnar side aspect of the wrist. And we'll go through some of the anatomy, some of the causes, and some of the treatment options as well. Next. So for the bone and the joints and that are a factor over here, you know, you have the ulna carpal joint here, and this is obviously what contains the TFCC. You have the lunate, the triquetrum, the hamate. Sometimes you can also have, you know, injuries here at the base of the fourth and fifth metacarpals, and then also the distal radial ulnar joint, or the DRUJ, down here. And all these bones and joints can come into play. Likewise, there are ligaments that connect these bones. You know, you have the intrinsic ligaments of the wrist, which are basically the ligaments that connect all of the small carpal bones. Then you have the extrinsic ligaments, which are the more superficial ligaments that kind of go across the back or the dorsum of the wrist. And these are commonly injured in a sprain, and they kind of come to a point and insert here on the triquetrum. So again, you have the, you know, one important ligament here between the lunate and the triquetrum, and then again the extrinsic ligament, which sort of sit on the back and insert on the very dorsal aspect of the triquetrum. And then we'll look at the TFCC, which again is located in here in a little more detail. Yeah, it's not advancing well, sorry. So for the tendons, the two really relevant ones are going to be your ECU, or your extensor carpi ulnaris, and then also FCU. ECU sits here in a groove at the end of the distal ulna. FCU is, again, on the sort of more volar or flexor surface. Both of those can be involved in tendonitis, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. And then the neurovascular anatomy, the ulnar nerve, comes around the inside of your elbow, where it can be compressed here. It travels down the ulnar aspect, deep in the forearm, and then into the hand. Before it comes into the hand, it sends a branch off here, a sensory branch that gives you sensation to the back of the hand. So this is sort of all told the cutaneous innervation of the hand, which is basically the pinky finger and one half of the ring finger, typically. And then your ulnar artery travels along with the nerve, again, to anastomose with the radial artery and give you the blood flow to the hand. But the ulnar artery is predominantly responsible for giving you blood flow to, again, the ulnar aspect of the hand. So when I'm taking a history with one of these patients, the first thing is, you know, was there any trauma? Because you'll have traumatic causes for ulnar wrist pain, and then you'll have sort of more insidious or gradual onset. And if there was trauma, what kind of trauma? Did they fall on it? Or was it some kind of injury involving a bat or a golf club? Because those can help point you into a different direction. Or did it develop gradually? Is there certain aggravating sports? You know, racket sports are common for causing ulnar-sided wrist pain. Do they have any associated neurologic symptoms, any numbness or tingling? And then also, is there anything where they're doing a lot of prolonged pressure? In particular, cyclists will be prone to certain types of issues in the ulnar wrist and hand. So when I'm examining it, the biggest thing that I can sort of tell you is to sort of be very specific in your exam, in particular when you're palpating different areas, and we'll look at that in a second. First kind of palpate different areas and see, you know, which is the most tender. Is this it or is this it? And then assess the range of motion. Is it painful? Flexion extension as well as pronation, supination, and then strength testing, does that reproduce any of their pain? And then a good vascular exam, a good nerve exam, and then specific ligament tests as well as specific tests to look at the TFCC, and then also to look for ECU subluxation. And that's kind of the general overview. We'll go into a little more detail. It's going to drive me nuts. So for the surface anatomy, this is a kind of marked out here some good surface anatomy. These are actually also the wrist scope portals that we use. Basically, this tells you kind of where the edge of the ulna is, where the triquetrum is. These different bony landmarks that are quite helpful when you're trying to figure out what is the pain generator. Here, you can see this is the pisiform, and it's right there at the base of the heel of your hand along the ulnar aspect, right at your wrist flexion crease, and it is contained within the FCU tendon. And then the fovea is that soft spot. If you come out the end of the distal ulna, you'll kind of dip into a soft spot, and that's right where the TFCC is. And then if you go farther out along the hypothenar eminence of the ulnar aspect of the palm, you can feel the hook of the hamate, which also can be injured. So in looking at range of motion, you look at flexion extension, you want to test the resist ECU, resist ulnar wrist extension and ulnar deviation to see if that really reproduces the pain. Also ulnar deviation just passively. And then when you're looking at pronation and supination, observe the end of the ulna. Does it look a little bit more prominent in certain positions? Because that can give you a hint as to some instability of the distal radial ulnar joint. So for a vascular exam, you can just palpate the radial and ulnar artery pulses, but you can also do an Allen's test where you have the patient clench their fist and you occlude both arteries. Then you can have them open and relax their hand and let one artery free, and you can see if that artery fills well. Specifically, you're looking at the ulnar artery when you're looking at ulnar wrist pain. You can also palpate. The artery runs right next to the hook of the hamate, so you can kind of feel in there. Does it feel like there's a mass or anything like that, or just some fullness? Ulnar nerve exam is important to do when you're looking at ulnar wrist pain. You want to look for any signs of cubital tunnel syndrome. An elbow flexion test where you hold the elbow flexed for a period of time, does that reproduce any of their pain, any numbness, tingling? The ulnar nerve then travels down here through Guillain's canal, and you can also sort of see if it's sensitive by doing a Tenelle's test or tapping along the nerve. Do they have any tingling here? And you test for the strength and finger abduction. If you spread your fingers out, that's predominantly what the ulnar nerve does in the hand. And then specific ligament test for the if they've had an injury to those extrinsic ligaments that we talked about, the superficial ones that insert here on the triquetrum, they'll be fairly point tender there. For the lunato-triquetral ligament, you can actually shuck and grab the lunate and the triquetrum and try to test for any instability or pain between the two. And then in assessing the distal radial ulna joint, you put your hand on one sort of hand on the distal ulna and then one on the distal radius and shuck between the two, see if there's any more instability compared with the other side. Now, going into the TFCC, I think this is where the meat of what y'all would be seeing. We abbreviate it for triangular fiber cartilage complex. It's a fairly complicated series of ligaments and other structures that exist on the ulnar aspect of the joint. So there are ligamentous structures that help connect the ulna to the carpus, and then there's ligaments between the distal radius and the ulna. And then there's also kind of a disc in the center. So I always describe it to patients. It's almost like the meniscus in the wrist, and it looks kind of like that also when you're scoping it. And it's like you combine the meniscus and the lateral collateral ligament of the knee, and you put it in the wrist. And that's essentially what the TFCC is. It helps to support the distal radial ulnar joint. So if it's damaged, you can get instability here. So TFCC tears are grouped into basically two sections. You either have traumatic tears, which happen after some sort of injury, or degenerative causes. And they're classified, and it's not really, it's up here, but it's not super important, but they're basically classified based on the location of the tear. So these injuries will usually happen from some sort of acute rotational injury to the forearm, or a combined kind of axial load injury with maybe some distraction along the ulnar wrist. It's kind of like the wrist sprain that just is not getting any better. So I see it in gymnasts, racket sports, and then also if you're using a drill and it binds up and you get that kind of twisting moment, that's a very common way that you can injure the TFCC. You can have it associated with distal radius fractures, and they can also complain of symptoms of DRUJ instability, some clicking or popping when they go to twist or rotate the wrist as well. So in assessing for TFCC injuries, you want to look, they'll have tenderness in that fovea, that soft spot there on the ulnar aspect of the wrist. They'll have pain with compression, so if you ulnar deviate the wrist, they'll have pain with that. If you place the wrist in ulnar deviation, compression, extension, that will really kind of elicit pain over the TFCC. And then also they'll sometimes complain of pain with weight bearing. When they go to get out of a chair, it'll bother them. And the biggest thing in assessing these and the most important thing for TFCC injuries is the DRUJ unstable? Because that's crucial as far as treatment's concerned. So here's just some diagrams of some exam findings here. Tenderness right there at the fovea. Here's what an ulnar carpal compression test looks like, where the wrist is in ulnar deviation, and you can kind of rotate it through extension, and it'll get pain here. And then DRUJ instability, you see here, see how the distal ulna is a little bit more proud? Now everybody looks a little bit different. Some people have a more prominent distal ulna than others, but so that's why you compare it to the other side, and in different positions of rotation, see it's almost kind of disappeared here where it's more prominent there, and again, the piano key test that we talked about. So these all get x-rays, and you can look for wideness. See, here's the DRUJ is a bit wide. The distal ulna is a bit dorsal. And again, here, the very, very prominent distal ulna here. And if there's any question, because these all can kind of can look, people can look a lot, look different on this lateral x-ray. So you always want to, if there's any question, I always compare it to the other side. Most of these will get an MRI. Here's an MRI of a normal looking TFCC. You see this nice smooth black ligament here attaching to the ulnar styloid versus here. Here's a TFCC tear where you have this dark ligament and then really nothing here. It's no longer attaching there at the base of the ulnar styloid. Usually there's contrast that's placed into the joint for these, and you can see contrast kind of tracking proximal into the DRUJ. So just because the TFCC is torn does not necessarily mean that they need surgery to fix it. It really depends on DRUJ instability. So if the DRUJ is unstable and they have a TFCC tear, bottom line, they need it repaired. Otherwise, they can be splinted, rested, and it can take 6 to 8 weeks for these to kind of settle down. Sometimes I'll offer injection to see if that helps kind of speed the sort of pain to resolve. But then, in high-level athletes, there is some argument for early repair just so that they don't have to wait the trial period of splinting and resting. So usually these are repaired with scope, and sometimes they're just kind of cleaned up. It really depends again on the location of the tear as far as what you're able to do. So sometimes with these little central tears here, they're just kind of cleaned up and they go into a splint and they can return to activity pretty quickly within about 6 weeks. But if you're going to do a repair, like as shown here, where you're passing stitches through to repair the ligament, Sometimes the DREJ will need to be pinned. These folks oftentimes are going to go into a long arm cast to control for rotation and won't really start range of motion before about 6 weeks and probably aren't back to full activity until closer to about 3 months. So it's really, there's a lot of variation as far as, if it's repaired, the rehab will be much longer. So ulnacarpal impaction is kind of like the degenerative cause of TFCC tears. And these folks, they have a long distal ulna where the distal ulna is longer than the radius, and it essentially abuts into the carpus and puts more pressure here through the TFCC, so you can get degenerative tears there. Here you can see some changes in the lunate where it's got some cystic change. It's kind of like early arthritis on this aspect of the joint. And these are treated with, if they fail conservative treatment, can be treated with an ulnar shortening. Now the LT ligament is a fairly uncommon ligament to tear in isolation, but this is actually one of my patients. It's the connection between the lunate and the triquetrum. As we talked about, you can assess it by doing a shear test where you sort of see for any reproduction of their pain in motion between the lunate and the triquetrum. Most often it kind of heals on its own. If you put them in a wrist splint and modify their activity for about 6 weeks, it usually kind of settles down on its own. But every once in a while, it will tend to remain painful. And in this case, here's a scope picture. Here's the lunate and here's the triquetrum. And all this frayed stuff is a ligament tear. And this is looking from the other side of the joint. There's a big gap here and a big step off. There's the edge of one bone. Here's the edge of the other. So there was a lot of instability here. Basically, I just cleaned up the ligament and then pinned it. And he ended up doing fine. But that's about the only time I've ever seen an LT ligament require surgery. So other trauma that can cause pain on the ulnar aspect of the hand or the wrist, hook a handmate fractures. These are classically, if you... golfers, you hit it fat and the club bangs into the handmate, which is prominent here. You can fracture here. Also, baseball players will get this injury. Then they'll be focally tender right over the hook of the handmate, and oftentimes they'll need a CT to diagnose it, but there's the fracture right there. These are treated with just taking the hook out and can return to activity pretty quickly. Again, this sort of quote-unquote wrist sprain is an injury to these extrinsic ligaments. Sometimes you can pull off a little fleck of bone. Here's a triquetral avulsion fracture here. Those will, just treated kind of symptomatically with a wrist splint as needed. And then you can also get fractures near the fourth and fifth CMC joints. So ECU, extensor carpi ulnaris can get tendonitis in it. It can also subluxate. These will kind of be a little more insidious onset. Although the folks that subluxate, that can actually happen fairly acutely. For ECU tendonitis, here's a diagram, or here's an MRI picture. You see all this, here's the ECU sitting in its groove, this little groove in the distal ulna, and there's fluid around it, fluid within the tendon. These that can be specific to, I see this a lot in racket sports, tennis players and whatnot, where they can get tendonitis, and oftentimes treated with just splinting. Therapy can have a big role for this, as well as injection. For ECU to subluxate, so here's ECU, and with different positions of forearm rotation, ECU can pop out of place. So here, as you bring it into supination, that's when it's most apt to kind of fall out of place. And here you can see there's the groove, and then the ECU tendon is kind of sitting off to the side. And so if you put your finger over ECU, and when you rotate, it should stay in its groove. And folks that where it's subluxated will tend to pop out. Here's a here's an MRI picture of ECU not in its groove. So here's where it's well located but has tendonitis, and here this person has kind of a shallower groove, and the tendon is sitting outside. Dynamic ultrasound can also be helpful to diagnose it. Here's an ultrasound picture of ECU within its groove, and then here it's kind of rolled out to the side. So again, so for treatment, here's the ECU tendon sheath. These folks can get pain that radiates kind of all the way up the forearm. And again, rest, immobilization, sometimes an injection. If for those that come in with a popping and have a subluxating ECU, if you catch them early, sometimes you can treat them in a long arm cast with the wrist actually in pronation, which helps pull the tendon into the groove. But I haven't overall found that super successful. So usually if they come in to see me, they're usually getting a reconstruction of their sheath. We're here. Here's ECU tendon, that sheath that's been opened. I usually use a burr to deepen the groove so it can sit a little bit deeper in the groove, and then put suture anchors to help tighten up the sheath so it can stay in place. So DREJ instability, again, is something that usually goes along with the TFCC injury. This is not subtle. This is in association with a distal third radial shaft fracture. This is a Galeazzi injury. And so this is not subtle DREJ instability, but sometimes DREJ instability can be a little bit sort of more subtle than that. And you have to distinguish between, is it the distal ulna that's kind of popping in and out, or is it ECU that's falling in and out of its groove? And sometimes that can be hard. But if there's any question, again, it's always helpful to compare it to the other side. Now, if you catch a TFCC injury early and it's repaired, then that can manage the DREJ instability fairly well. But sometimes they'll come into me late, and the surgery for that's a little bit more complicated. It requires a ligament reconstruction, and their rehab is quite a bit longer. It takes probably 6 months for them to get there to be back to full activity after that. And if you don't treat DREJ instability, the distal ulna should sit right nicely in this groove here, the distal radius. If you don't treat the instability, then you can get arthritis here long term. So a couple kind of less common causes for ulnar wrist and hand pain. Hypothenar hammer syndrome. This is an injury to the ulnar artery, which either causes it to occlude or block off, or you can get an aneurysm where you can also have disrupted flow. This happens from single or repeated blows to the heel of the hand. So if you're using like the heel of your hand as a hammer to bang something in, this is what can happen. You can also see it in golfers, mountain bikers, and they can present with symptoms of ischemia or coolness to the fingertips, particularly the pinky and the ring finger, or cold intolerance. And they can also get some ulnar nerve symptoms, as well as just pain along the ulnar aspect of the hand or the hypothenar aspect of the hand. Diagnosis is made through angiography. So here's a nice angiogram showing, here's the ulnar artery, and you see this big blob right here. That's the aneurysm. Sometimes, with just some rest and some antihypertensive medicines, you can treat these. But oftentimes, if the pain or especially ischemias persist, they need surgery, and you have to resect. Here's an aneurysm that's been resected. It's got all this clot in here. There's the ulnar artery, and then it's treated with a vein graft. And then the other thing to be aware of with ulnar wrist pain is you have to examine the ulnar nerve, because I've seen people who have come in, they've had previous surgeries for either TFCC problem, DREJ problems, and really it was an ulnar nerve issue that was giving them ulnar wrist pain. The ulnar nerve can cause some very vague symptoms of just pain. It's not always numbness and tingling, so the ulnar nerve always needs to be examined if somebody comes in complaining of ulnar wrist and hand pain. Classically, they'll have numbness and tingling, sometimes weakness. The ulnar nerve can be compressed in basically two different areas. One is the ulnar tunnel, which refers to the ulnar nerve through the hand. It comes through here and wraps around the hook of the handmade and can get compressed in different zones in here. Typically, we talked about the dorsosensory branch has already exited before the hand, so usually the sensation on the back of the hand is preserved, but they can have numbness and tingling in the ring and small fingers. Sometimes this can happen because of a cyst that can occur near these bones, and so I usually MRI these to look for anything that might be causing mechanical compression. And if it doesn't improve with splinting, it can require decompression. So most commonly, though, as opposed to in the hand, the ulnar nerve is usually involved at the elbow, and it travels around the medial epicondyle. It's your funny bone nerve, and it's very vulnerable to compression here. Usually they'll have some component of elbow or forearm pain, but not always. Sometimes there's just this vague sort of discomfort along the ulnar forearm and wrist. Conservative treatment for this is to avoid positions that keep your elbow bent for long periods of time, or avoid pressure on the inside of the elbow. I have a mild case of this, and when I was driving a lot between here and San Antonio, and I'd rest my arm on the center console, my hand would go numb. So, things like that you just avoid, and it can be managed typically very well with that, but in some cases it can't, and in which case, it can be decompressed and sometimes transposed to relieve the pressure on it. So just to summarize, again, ulnar wrist pain is very multifactorial. As we've seen, you can have ligament injuries, you can have nerve issues that can cause pain. But questions to ask, obviously, is there trauma? What kind of trauma? Are there specific activities that elicit the pain? Did it come on gradually? And when you're examining the wrist, be very specific. Sometimes what I'll do if I'm narrowing it down, and I'll say, okay, well, is it number one or number two? Is it tender over the tendon, or is it tender over the fovea? Sometimes it's hard, and sometimes you can get it narrowed down, but you're not totally confident as to which it is. And I'll use projection sometimes to really help help figure it out, because it is a complicated issue. Important to ask about any neurovascular symptoms, and then also to assess for any instability symptoms, especially when you're looking at TFCC injuries and in regards to the distal radial ulnar joint. Thank you. I'm happy to entertain questions. Yeah.